Army of Indra.
Bhagavat,
of the Supreme Lord. Pada Ambujam, the lotus feet. Vibrat, taking hold of. Mohu, repeatedly. Prema, out of love. Vibhinnaya, which was melting. Dhiya, from his heart. Uvachah, said. Ananda, caused by his ecstasy. Jala,
with water tears.
Akula, filled.
Ikshanah,
whose eyes. Prahirsita,
standing erect.
Roma,
the hair on whose limbs.
Nripa,
O King Parikshit.
Gadgada,
choking.
Aksaram,
whose syllables.
Translation by disciples of His Divine Grace, Yashit Kivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Taking hold of the Lord's lotus feet again and again, Bali, the conqueror of Indra's army, spoke from his heart, which was melting out of his intense love. O King, as tears of ecstasy filled his eyes and the hair on his limbs stood on end, he began to speak with faltering words. Please repeat after me. Taking hold of the Lord's lotus feet again and again, Bali, the conqueror of Indra's army, spoke from his heart, which was melting out of his intense love. O King, as tears of ecstasy filled his eyes and the hair on his limbs stood on end, he began to speak.
With faltering words.
Purport. Srila Prabhupada describes this scene as follows in Krishna. Krishna means the book Krishna. King Bali was feeling such transcendental pleasure that he repeatedly grasped the lotus feet of the Lord and kept them on his chest, and sometimes he put them on the top of his head, and in this way he was feeling transcendental bliss. Tears of love and affection began to flow down from his eyes and all his hairs stood on end.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya
Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Larita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopikakanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivatadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Before this chapter, which is chapter 85, was spoken, we all heard about this chapter where the sages are glorifying the Lord. The sages are glorifying Lord Krishna. This is just to give you a background of what has happened thus far and then pick it up from here. So, when the sages are glorifying Lord Krishna continuously, at that time, Vasudev and Devaki are also present there. Now what happens is, when the sages are glorifying the Aishwarya, the opulence of the Lord, and continuously this is being heard by Vasudev and Devaki, what happens gradually? Vasudev and Devaki develop some Aishwarya bhava, which is not their constitutional position, because the rasa of Vasudev and Devaki is what? It's Vatsalya Rasa. Therefore what happens is, Vasudev eventually comes to Lord and tells him, I am not able to see you as my son, because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all universes emanate from the pores of your body, and so on and so forth. Now this is very disturbing to the mood of Lord Krishna, because he doesn't want this kind of relationship with Vasudev and Devaki. He wants them to look upon him as their son. Therefore, Lord Krishna, in his conversations, plays a small trick. He starts giving them some kind of Mayavad philosophy, deliberately. He says, no, we are all, at the end of the day, everything is coming from the Supreme Person, and we are all part and part. So, as good as you and me are same, and all of us are part and particles of the Supreme, and so on and so forth. So, he tries to slightly mislead Vasudev and make him less conscious of his Aishwarya per se. In the meantime, Devaki, who has been listening to all this, comes. She has other thoughts. She comes to Lord Krishna and tells him that now that we have heard that you have powers of bringing back people who are already dead. Okay. And he was quoting how Lord Krishna saved the son of his guru, Sandipani Muni, and then brought him back to life after he was dead. He says, why don't you do the same thing for my sons who were killed by Kamsa in the jail? So Lord says, yes, okay, I'll do that. And in order to do that, the Lord goes to Sutala Loka. Because those sons were Sutala Loka. So the sons who were killed by Kamsa in the jail, basically these sons were originally the sons of Marichi. And then when all of us must be knowing the past time in the third canto, I believe, where Brahma, Lord Brahma, gets attracted to his own daughter, Vak, and runs behind her. Okay. So at that time, apparently, these people, Marichi's sons, laughed and ridiculed Brahma. And somehow, they were cursed to take birth as children of Hiranyakashipu. Okay. So they were always cursed to take such births. And eventually, these children had the fortune of taking birth in Devaki's womb. And then there, they got killed. And then they went to Pataloka to atone for their sins, for their past sins. Sutaloka, sorry. So therefore Lord Krishna tells Devaki, yes, I'll go and bring the children. So he goes to Sutaloka. When he goes to Sutaloka, who does he meet there? Maharaj. He meets Maharaj Bali. Because Maharaj Bali is there in Sutaloka. Okay. So Prabhupada says, okay, so he meets Maharaj Bali there. So today, when we have this few set of verses about Maharaj Bali, we thought that why not, you know, have a discussion on the mood of Maharaj Bali. We all know about the Navaveda Bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Vandanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Okay. So all of us know that the name of Maharaj Bali is synonymous with the process of Atmanivedana. So, since we are discussing Maharaj Bali today, so we thought why not discuss something about how Bali Maharaj and why Bali Maharaj is basically known for this quality of Atmanivedana. And as you can see here, Bali Maharaj is exuding ecstatic symptoms from his body. Okay. Now, this is only possible for a pure devotee of the Lord. And we all know that Bali Maharaj is one of the 12 Mahajanas, or the greatest of great devotees. Now, in the earlier verse, this is verse 38, in the earlier verse which His Holiness Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj discussed yesterday, there is an interesting verse. Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada writes in his purport to the earlier verse that Bali Maharaj's devotional attitude is renowned as the perfect example of complete self-surrender. Complete self-surrender is also called as Sharanagati. When Lord Vishnu, in the guise of a young Brahmana student, approached him for charity, Bali offered all he possessed, and when he had nothing more to offer, he surrendered himself as the Supreme Lord's eternal servant. This is what we had discussed yesterday in the class. So this process of Atma Nivedana has always been, you know, personally very intriguing to myself, and I thought why not, you know, do some research on it. So over the last two or three days, I had the opportunity to read some of Srila Prabhupada's books, some reference from Nectar of Devotion, and some lectures from senior devotees. So today I'll make a small attempt to share that with all of you, and that will also help me in my own purification. So before we go into how Bali Maharaj displayed the quality of Atma Nivedanam, there are a few quotes which define what Atma Nivedanam actually is. To start with, Srila Rupa Goswami defines in Nectar of Devotion that Atma Nivedanam is one of the 64 limbs of bhakti, of devotional service. Atma Nivedanam means full self-surrender. As per Rupa Goswami, Atma Nivedanam means full self-surrender, which means surrender of the mind, the body and the soul. Mind, body and soul, if we surrender to Lord Krishna, then we can say that is Atma Nivedanam. Because Atma is sometimes used interchangeably in the scriptures, even to sometimes mean the body. Also, we have this famous song by His Holiness Bhakti Vinod Thakur, from Sharanagati. All of you must have heard this song. Manaso deho geho yo kichuna mor arpilo tuya pade nandakishor. Manasa deho geho yo kichumor arpilo tuya pade nandakishor. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, mind, body and family, whatever may be mine, I have surrendered unto your lotus feet, O Nandakishore, O youthful son of Nanda. Further he says, Sampade vipade jivane marane daya mama gela tuya o pada varane. Which means, in good fortune or in bad, in life or in death, jivane marane, all my difficulties have disappeared because I have chosen those lotus feet of yours as my only shelter. No other shelter. Only the lotus feet is the shelter in any circumstance. Slay me or protect me as you wish, for you are the master of your eternal servant. Further he says, if it is your will that I be born again, then may it be in the home of your devotee. And then finally he says, let me be born again, even as a worm, as long as I may remain your devotee. I have no desire to be born as a Brahma who is averse to you. So these are the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur from the poem Sharanagati. So in this poem, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives us the mood of Atma Nivedanam, or surrender. Yamunacharya, the great saint, also said, I may live in any body, I don't care which body I get in the next lifetime, any body is okay, as long as in that body I am always surrendered to you and I am of some service to you, my dear Lord. And then finally, Srila Prabhupada's commentary, quotes on surrender. Srila Prabhupada said that this Navavidha Bhakti, which we discussed, nine processes of devotional life, service, are there. Srila Prabhupada said that Atma Nivedanam is the common component which permeates across all the other limbs of Bhakti, all the items of devotional service, all the Navavidha Bhakti. So Srila Prabhupada said that if we do Shravanam, we do Kirtanam, we do Archanam, we do Dasyam and so on and so forth, if we do that without the mood of Atma Nivedanam, self-surrender, then all these processes remain merely ritualistic. And it will fail to excite us in performing these processes. So Atma Nivedanam is the central component around which all the other eight limbs of Bhakti are rotating, revolving around. Now, the Bhagavad Dharma or Krishna consciousness, we all know through the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is the highest religion. Okay. We have seen many religions which are called as so-called religions, which is called as Kaitava Dharma. In Canto 1, it says false religion, which we are supposed to reject and adopt true religion, which is Bhagavad Dharma. Now, what is the characteristic of a false religion? We have seen many times outside, it is being propounded, in giving we receive. Yeah, we have heard many times, right? In giving we receive. Now that is not the highest religion. In Krishna consciousness, the reason why it is highest is because our philosophy is, in giving we learn to give more and more and more. So a pure devotee does not expect that in giving we receive something. So that is why Bhagavad Dharma is very, very different, at a very different platform than so many other so-called religions of this world. Now, the beauty of Sharanagati, the beauty of this philosophy that in giving we learn to give more, is that even if we don't come up to that level, that standard, still we always feel guilty. This is one thing which is wonderful about Krishna consciousness. We may not be perfect devotees, but deep inside, as long as we are chanting sincerely, as long as we are following the processes of devotional service, as long as we are in the association of devotees, this guilt is always there inside somewhere. Externally, we may even tell someone, no, I am doing well, but we cannot run away from our own consciousness. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Whereas if you see in the false religions, people get convinced that I have done so much, I am something great, I am a very special person. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, we always feel, we always have that sincerity deep inside within us, and the Paramatma always keeps us, you know, in check, that no, there is something more that you have to do. You are not on the highest platform as of now. Externally, whatever we may do, but internally that voice is always there with us. Now, this is the mood of Atma Nivedanam. This is because the process of Krishna consciousness itself has got Atma Nivedanam as one of the components. So we always know that I have not surrendered completely. There is something still remaining in my heart. So which is why that guilt is a very positive guilt that is always required to be in the heart. Otherwise one can become very pompous. So that is the very nature of Sharanagati or Atma Nivedanam. Now, coming to the components of Atma Nivedanam, most of us know the famous verse which says Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjanam. There are various components of Atma Nivedanam, six items of Atma Nivedanam. So Anukulyasya Sankalpa means what? Anukulyasya Sankalpa means accept all those things which are favorable for Krishna consciousness, and Pratikulyasya Varjanam means reject all those things which are unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. In today's class, we are not going to be talking more about what is Anukulyasa and what is Pratikul, because all of us already know that. Okay. We already know that chanting, associating with devotees and all are Anukulyasa, and you know, not meat eating, intoxication, these are all Pratikul, which are unfavorable for devotional service. So we will not belabor on that today. In some of the lectures, I heard some very unique points about this Anukulyasa Sankalpan Pratikulyasa Vajanam. That's what I thought I'll share under this topic. So I heard in one of the lectures, Vashila Prabhupada, that this is only possible, this Anukulyasa Sankalpa, following what is favorable for Krishna consciousness and rejecting what is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness, is only possible if we are able to see the existence of Krishna in every aspect of our lives. If we are not able to see Krishna everywhere, then we will never be able to follow this process. Or we may be following, but to that extent it will be suboptimal. So Srila Prabhupada says that the basic difference between Vedic civilization and modern civilization is that in modern civilization we always see matter in spirit. Whereas Vedic civilization teaches us to see spirit in matter. That is why we have in third canto the principles of Sankhya Yoga, which is very elaborately explained by Kapila Muni. That's why sometimes, you know, we are told not to jump to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam without systematically studying the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because by studying the first 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, we will be able to appreciate what is why and how we have to see spirit in matter. Because unless we understand the science of Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult to directly come to the mood of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, today modern society, Srila Prabhupada says, is suffering because we do not see spirit in matter. And when we do not see spirit in matter, we do not see Krishna in all particles of matter, and when we do not see Krishna in all particles of matter, that is the reason why the concept of exploiting matter comes about. Now, if you see examples of in the Shastras, in the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are hearing about this conflict between Maharaj Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, right? Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu. This is the exact problem with Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj was able to see God everywhere, even in matter, whereas Hiranyakashipu was not able to see God anywhere. Now this was a basic conflict between them. So even though the Lord appeared eventually from a pillar to kill Hiranyakashipu, even at that time Hiranyakashipu had a choice to surrender to the Lord. But what did he do? He chose to instead fight with the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada says in his purports that demanding to see God without the requisite qualifications to see God is a symptom of demonic nature. So therefore, how do we then cultivate that desire to see? How do we get the merits to see God? So in the first canto it is explained, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabjate. So we have to first understand who are we. We have to understand that everything that we see is verily Brahman. Everything is coming from the effulgence of the body of the Lord. And then we have to understand that that Supreme Lord also has a localized aspect within us called as Paramatma. Only if we understand this, then we can come to the third platform of being able to see God directly and having the qualifications to have a relationship with the Lord. So Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, one has to go through this process. Now, there are so many people in society who call themselves as self-made men. They say, I am a self-made man. If you see the background of most of these self-made men, these men have probably been exploited when they were very young. They did not get much support from their parents. They didn't get much support from society. They have had continuous struggle. Now, the problem with that is that these people have not learned the culture of dependency. Even today, in modern management philosophy, in Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is a must read for all managers today, Stephen Covey says that interdependence is very important, even for a successful, for a manager becoming a successful leader. One has to understand the importance of interdependency. Now, unfortunately, when these so-called self-made men come and speak, since they have not learned this culture of dependency, therefore they find it extremely difficult to accept Krishna consciousness. Whereas a person who has struggled in his life, who knows that he has to depend on someone or the other at every point in life, they very readily take to the process of Krishna consciousness. So when we tell them surrender to Krishna, then they are much more receptive than the other classes of men. In fact, when the astronauts went to the moon, okay, and then Prabhupada says, of course, they never went to the moon, but let's just buy the story for some time, that when they supposedly went to the moon and then they came back, these people were invited to a school and told to address the school children. So these astronauts talked about how they went to the moon and whatever. Now, among the children was an innocent child, you know, who immediately raised his hand and said, you know, I want to ask a question. So he said, what is the question that you want to ask? He said, you went so high up, did you see God there? So the astronauts replied that yes, we went high up, but it was very dark out there. We looked around everywhere, but unfortunately we couldn't see him anywhere. So the astronauts internally concluded that maybe God is not there. So one of the priests who was sitting, the school priest who was sitting, he got up and told the children, don't be so surprised that they didn't see God there. To be able to see God there, one has to learn the art of seeing God here in the form of Archa Vigraha, which is what Prabhupada also tells us. If we don't cultivate the habit of seeing God here and everywhere here, then there is no question of we being able to see God anywhere else. And Srila Prabhupada says that one of the reasons why people live very less in Kali Yuga is precisely because we don't have this habit of seeing God everywhere. Therefore, we have over dependence on the mercy of all other entities except God. Like for example, Srila Prabhupada says that the whole society today is so designed, we have heaters, we have electricity, we have water supply and so on and so forth, that we are so dependent on Yarra Valley Corporation, then what is that? Origin Electricity. Now anything goes wrong with any of these, then we find it extremely difficult to survive. So Srila Prabhupada says that man has become a slave of his own facilities today. Therefore, because man has become a slave of his own facilities, the dependence of man on God has come down quite a lot. Therefore, it has become very difficult when we talk about Sharanagati to someone for him to accept that readily. Srila Prabhupada said that to develop Sharanagati, one has to come to the platform of, one has to start practicing simple living and high thinking. And Srila Prabhupada said that this simple living is actually not simple.
Simple living is very difficult. Difficult living is very simple.
Simple living means, for example, one has to become very ready to go to the farm. Okay. So far, only two devotees, His Grace Keshava Prabhu and His Grace Manikdeva Prabhu, have summed up the courage to go and then live in the farm all alone. So last week I had gone to the farm. There was no retreat in the farm. We had just gone to the farm on a casual visit, some of us. And then I saw the farm all empty. Normally, when we go to the farm, already there are 15 cars parked there. So when we come to the farm, there are 15 people telling, Haribol, Prabhu. And then, we also say Haribol, and then we enter with ecstasy. So that day when I went, there was nobody. And then Manigriva Prabhu came out of, his cottage, and I was just admiring these two people that they are just living all alone by themselves in the farm. There is nobody to talk to, there is no association that way. But then, that just shows how elevated they are in their consciousness, that they are accepting to go there and living alone in the farm. Now, Srila Prabhupada says that is a symptom of Saranagati or Atma Nivedanam, where we entirely depend, we don't depend on the external, that material nature provides us, and we totally depend on the internal. So that is, so when we understand this philosophy, only then when we can follow the principles of Anukulyasya Sankalpa and Pratikulyasya Varjanam. So this is important, seeing Krishna everywhere. Then the third principle of surrender is Rakshasiti Vishwaso. Rakshasiti Vishwaso means what? Having the faith that only Lord Krishna is the supreme protector. For example, in the olden days, in India, the farmers used to entirely depend upon the rain. If we see, the farmers of India were one of the most pious people. And they used to always come home in the evening, since there was no electricity and all in those days, they used to put camphor and then they used to light the lamp for the Lord, and then they used to have darshan of the Lord. Because there was no electricity, the Lord has to be seen. They want to take darshan. So they used to put the light all over the feet of the Lord, the head of the Lord, and so that they can see. So this was the kind of practice the farmers used to do. They used to till the land the whole day, come in the evening, go to the temple, see the deity, then come home, sit together with the family, have prasadam. That prasadam was not purchased from Kmart or what is that place? Kohl's and Safeway. That prasadam was verily grown in the fields there. It didn't come from industry, it came directly from agriculture. It didn't come through the supply chain network of modern day society. So it was a very simple living. And the farmers therefore were entirely dependent for their food on what Mother Earth directly gives them. Whereas today, one of my cousin brothers, it was a very interesting story. One of my cousins who has always lived abroad, once he went to one of the villages to meet his aunt a few years back. And then he told his mother, "Mother, see, milk is coming from cow." So he was very surprised. Milk is coming from cow. So he is always used to the bottled milk coming outside his home or buying from mall. So this is the nature, this is how consciousness has changed over a period of time. We have forgotten the fundamentals from where things come. Because we simply can't see it and perceive it. We are so far away from reality. So there is a very interesting shloka in Marathi, which says, Sheti Uttam Vyapar Madhyam Nokri Asam. In Marathi it is said, Sheti Uttam. Sheti Uttam means what? Uttam means what? Higher. Sheti in Hindi, maybe in Sanskrit also, it means agriculture. So it is said that agriculture is the highest occupation actually. And Vyapar is Madhyam. Vyapar means trade. Is Madhyam. So if you start your own business, and you do that, then that is Madhyam. And the worst third class occupation is Nokri or a job. Okay. Why? Because the definition of highest occupation is that occupation is the highest occupation where the dependency on Lord Krishna is direct and the highest amount of dependency is there. When we go to job, we are so far removed from Krishna. We think that how can I please my boss? What will happen tomorrow? Whether I'll get a salary raise? Whether I'll get a promotion? Right? Whether they'll transfer me somewhere. This worry is always in the back of the mind. So we are somehow conditioned to think that our happiness is eventually in the hands of our bosses. And our bosses are taking care of us in our office. Right? So we are far removed. So therefore, Sheti Uttam and Nokri is Adham. Nokri means third class. Job is third class profession. So Rakshi Siddhi Vishwaso. So we have to have the third principle of Atma Nivedanam or surrender, Saranagati, is that Krishna is the only protector. The fourth stage is Goptatve Varanam Tatha, that Krishna is the real maintainer. Not only he is the protector, but he is also the real maintainer. So Srila Prabhupada said that one of the primary reasons for cultural degradation which has happened in India today is the substitution of agriculture with industry. Now when India got its independence way back in 1947, immediately after independence, all the leaders, they had a very wrong kind of worry. They said, no, India is independent but we don't have enough industry. Therefore what they did was, the complete focus of the leadership was in producing nuts and bolts rather than increasing the emphasis on making agriculture more efficient. They concentrated more on cash crops. Okay. Even in agriculture the focus was there, and of course industry. So producing all these gizmos of modern day world. So therefore we find that with this kind of a culture today, India is, it is said in the Forbes review which I read last week, the Forbes review predicted that India and China are going to be the next superpowers in the world. So what's happening is, it's very clear the way India is going. India is materially flourishing and it may become the number one economy in the world tomorrow. But what has happened? Culturally, we are going to become the most degraded country. And it was exactly the opposite. And that's where India is going today. So Srila Prabhupada says that Goptatve Varanam Tatha. This is because we have forgotten to realize that Krishna is the real maintainer. There is an interesting example. It just happened, this incident happened in Fiji, okay, where one Vakreshwar Pandit Prabhu, a senior devotee in ISKCON, and His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj went there. Now they went there to Fiji on a preaching mission, and His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj was lecturing in an agricultural college there. So at that time Fiji had a severe drought. There was no rainfall for the last 2 years, right? And everyone was worried that how can we bring rainfall. So His Grace Tamal Krishna Maharaj talked about the glories of Sankirtana Yajna, the chanting of the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So he said that if we perform this Sankirtana Yajna loudly, Nagar Sankirtana, chanting these holy names and also Japa, then definitely it will produce rainfall. So after this lecture was over, one professor, lady professor of that university, got up and raised her hands and said, see, we have not had rainfall in Fiji. So, are you sure that if you chant this holy name, rain will come? So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, yes, definitely rain will come. Why not? So he said, can you please perform Sankirtana now? And then we will see whether rains are coming or not. So Vakreshwar Pandit Prabhu got very skeptical. So what is the situation that Krishna is putting us in? But anyway, since he was under the association of a very pure devotee, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he put all his faith in Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, okay, let us chant and show these people that rain will come. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, till rain comes, please don't stop chanting. So then, they started chanting very loudly, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. 1 hour passed, 1.5 hours passed, 2 hours passed. At the end of 2 hours, the clouds exploded and there was rainfall. Are you? So there was rainfall and everyone was amazed to see this. That rainfall which has eluded them for so many months happened. So what happens? When such an incident happens, then Rakshisiti Vishwaso. Then the faith in Krishna goes up. So this faith that Krishna is the real maintainer has to come in, and that is very essential for Atma Nivedana or Sharanagati. So we have seen Anukulesa Sankalpa Pratikulesa Varjanam Rakshisiti Vishwaso Kopatritve Varanam Tha. Then the fifth one is Atma Nikshepa. Atma Nikshepa means what? Atma Nikshepa means, it comes from the word Shepa. Shepa comes from the word object to something. Okay. Therefore, Nikshepa is the opposite of object. Nikshepa means not to object anything, not to resist at all. Okay. Now, what is it that we are talking about that we should not resist? Atmanikshepa means not objecting to the interference of Lord Krishna in our own lives. So if Lord Krishna wants us to give some opulence or whether he wants us to give some suffering, we unconditionally accept whatever he gives, suffering as well as opulences that he gives. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, Sampade Vipade Jivane Marane. He said, Sampade, whether I get opulence, or Vipade, whether I get any calamity, Jivane Marane, in life or in death, I am always surrendered to you, my dear Lord. So that is called as the mood of Atmanikshepa. So, we have the verse of Bali Maharaj. So let's see how Bali Maharaj, past time, we come to understand how he followed all these principles. So if you see the background of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was actually, the history is that he was not a regular practicing devotee per se. We have not heard anywhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. In fact, it was quite the contrary. Bali Maharaj was demon number one, if you see. Because he was on the side of the demon, always fighting with the devatas. Right? So it is said that if anyone fights with the Vaishnava, then how he can be classified as a, anyone fights with the devotees of the Lord, then he cannot be a devotee. So Bali Maharaj actually externally was like that. He was fighting against the demigods. So externally if you see, one will never say that he is a Mahajan. And also he defeated the devatas time and again. And therefore then we know that the pastime of churning the nectar was there, and then the Lord came and then gave the nectar to the devatas. And the devatas were very pleased, except Lord Indra. Lord Indra was still not pleased after that. Why? Because Bali Maharaj still was very powerful. He was the owner of all the three worlds. And he had all the opulences which otherwise should have belonged to Indra. So he was still not happy after all that. He wanted that too. Okay. So, Indra was still unhappy. Therefore, apparently, to please the devatas. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya duskritam. So apparently, to please the devatas, Lord Vishnu descended himself as Lord Vamanadeva. But Srila Prabhupada says that the real reason, the higher reason why Lord came down as Vamanadeva was to give the facility to Bali Maharaj to exhibit this highest principle of Navavida Bhakti, which is called as Atma Nivedana. That was his higher purpose. So, Vaishnava Charan Prabhu few days back had given me this book, Brahmacharya in Krishna Consciousness by Bhakti Vikas Swami. I was trying to read that book, though I am a grahastha. Initially I thought this book is not relevant for grahastha. It must be for Brahmacharya. So I started reading that book little bit. And then when I read that book, I found that almost everything is applicable to grahastha. But it was very difficult for me, to adopt many of the things which are given in that book. Okay, being a conditioned grahastha that I am. But here we see the beauty of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu, before he came down on Vamanadeva, he was enjoying with 16,108 wives. So from that platform of Grihastha, he immediately, for the sake of his devotee, came down as a Brahmachari. So from Grihastha to Brahmachari, there was a very quick transition, which is very difficult for modern day Grihastha to make. So Vamanadeva came as a Brahmachari in front of Bali Maharaj. Now let's see what happened in this pastime. The moment Bali Maharaj saw Vamanadeva, simply by seeing the beauty of the Lord, Bali Maharaj was fascinated. And then Bali Maharaj asked Vamanadeva, "What can I do for you?" And then what did Vamanadeva ask him? Lord Vishnu asked him, "I just have come to ask for 3 steps of land." So Bali Maharaj said, "You don't seem to be a wise person, worldly wise person. You seem to be a very unintelligent kind of a person. I'm such a big man. I'm giving, I can give you so many things. You just want 3 steps of land. Ask for something bigger." So Vamanadeva tells him that in this world, one will never be satisfied, what to speak of 3 steps. Even if one gets the 3 worlds, even then one is never satisfied in this material world. So indirectly, Vamanadeva touched the weak point of Bali Maharaj. He said, "Though you have the 3 worlds, you are also not very happy. You are doing some rituals now." Right? So he brings, he reminds Bali Maharaj of that philosophy. Yeah. And says, "Don't worry, I only need 3 steps. Nothing more than that." Now, who is sitting next to Bali Maharaj? His Guru Maharaj, who is Shukracharya is sitting. So Shukracharya immediately knows he is a jnani. So Shukracharya being a jnani immediately knows that this is none other than Lord Vishnu or none other than Lord Hari. Now, the meaning of Hari in Sanskrit is one who takes everything away from him. So he says, this is Lord Hari, beware, don't come under his trap. He will take everything away from you and you will be nowhere after this. So he is warning Bali Maharaj. So Srila Prabhupada in his commentary says, this is proof enough that jnana cannot lead to bhakti. Mere jnana cannot lead one to bhakti. Here was a person, Shukracharya, who had that jnana which others did not have, that he was the supreme personality of Godhead. But still what happened? Though that jnana was there, still instead of Shukracharya surrendering to him and instructing Bali Maharaj, Lord Vishnu has come, anyway now you cannot win with him. That is what the Guru is supposed to tell the disciple. But he told exactly the opposite. So Srila Prabhupada comment that the motivation is more important than knowledge. So, Shukracharya then tries to give different kind of logic to Bali Maharaj to be careful. So he says, fine, you have, no, the Brahmana has come and you have told him that you will give him the 3 steps of land. But you know what? You didn't chant Om before you told him. So in the Veda it is written that anything that if you have to do Arpanam, we have to say first Om. Only then that thing is valid, that promise is valid. So he gives lot of logic, tark vitark, to Bali Maharaj. Saying that you didn't say Om, so therefore it's okay, even if you have not promised him anything even now, so you can get out of it. So Bali Maharaj doesn't agree. So Shukracharya gives him another one. He says that in the scripture it is written that one can lie in many circumstances. Okay. One can lie to protect one's life. One can lie if one is doing religious rituals. At that time one can tell a lie. One can lie if one has to maintain a family. So therefore, please lie and let me continue receiving my remuneration from you, my dakshina. That was the mood of Shukracharya as the priest. Now, Bali Maharaj tells something interesting in response to this. Bali Maharaj obviously, he is a Mahajana. So, a Mahajana never disrespects anyone, okay, whether he is a devotee or a non-devotee. So Bali Maharaj did not reject or did not disrespect his Guru's words. Bali Maharaj accepted everything which Guru Maharaj told on the basis of Vedic philosophy. But Bali Maharaj had a conversation with Guru Maharaj on Bhagavad Dharma, which is higher than Vedic philosophy. And based on Bhagavad Dharma, he gave several interesting reasons to convince Shukracharya. What were those reasons? The first reason, number one, Bali Maharaj said that why he should go ahead and give whatever Lord Vishnu has asked is Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suhrudam Sarva Bhutanam Nyatvamvam Shanti Prachati. The Lord is Sarva Loka Maheshwaram and he is Suhrudam, he is the supreme well-wisher of every living entity. Therefore he says that when I am offering something, if you are saying that he is Lord Vishnu, then Lord Vishnu, we all know, is the supreme maintainer of everyone. So by giving something to Lord Vishnu, how can I become a pauper? So he gives that logic first. Then he says, secondly, do you know that I am the grandson of none other than Prahlad Maharaj? So Srila Prabhupada says that for some devotees, surrendering to Krishna is a family business. So therefore, Bali Maharaj is now quoting his lineage and says that how can I then go against this, the culture of my lineage? And the third reason he gives is, he quotes Maharaj Yudhishthira's conversation with Yaksha. He says, Maharaj Yudhishthira also did not, when Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Yaksha, what is the greatest burden of this earth, which earth cannot bear? So the earth, Mother Earth, Yaksha says that Mother Earth cannot bear a lie. Okay, therefore this is quoted by Bali Maharaj here. Bali Maharaj says, the earth cannot bear any kind of a lie. Of course, in modern day society, you know, we have what is called as a white lie and a black lie. Anyone heard of this? White lie and black lie? In India specifically, we have Safed Jhoot, we say. You know, white lie and black lie. a white line is, suppose you know, you go through the Indian customs. So many of you, when you visit Vrindavan or Mayapur, you must have gone through the customs office in India, and you know how horrible they are, right? So a customs officer is said to be honest if he takes the money from you and allows you, to go along with it, okay? Then he's an honest person, okay? If you give a bribe to someone, as long as the person does your job, then he's a nice, honest person. That is called as a white lie, not a black lie. Suffice to right? So therefore, here, Bali Maharaj is not, into those worldly philosophies of white lie and black lie. He says a lie is a lie is a lie. So he's convincing Shukracharya. The fourth reason he says that in any case, if I don't offer in all this of whatever the Lord wants, anyway the jaws of death will come one time, and when death comes, then all our possessions anyway I am going to lose. Right? So it's better that I offer it to the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada writes in his commentaries that anyone who loses all his opulences by breaking the four regulatory principles. For example, many people I heard lose their all their wealth in crown casino, in gambling. So Srila Prabhupada writes that anyone who breaks, who loses everything by breaking four regulatory principles, that person is condemned by everyone, by society. However, if anyone loses all his opulences in charity, such a person gets into the books of history and is always glorified. So Bali Maharaj is convincing Shukracharya, now if I offer whatever Lord Vishnu wants, don't you think that I will be glorified? As my spiritual master, you will also be glorified. Right? So he is convincing Bali Maharaj. And I heard in one of the lectures that in Japan, there is this group called as Kamakazis. Okay, this is a terrorist organization of 16-year-old Japanese students. Okay. And it is said that the LTT, the Liberation Tigers of the Tamil Eelam, what they did in Sri Lanka, was very much, the Kamakazis were very much a motivation for this LTT. And LTT is a motivation for groups like Al-Qaeda today, the terrorist organization. Now, if you see these terrorist organizations, what they do, they have a cause which they have. Okay. And for that cause, they even become human bombs. They are willing to completely, give their mind, body and soul for the sake of that cause. Now can we say that is surrender? That is not real surrender, because surrender, what is the first rule of surrender? Anukulyasya sankalpa. Though apparently for their own group it may be surrender, but for the common society it is gruesome act. It's a gruesome act and it is painful for everyone around them. And obviously it is not pleasing to Lord Krishna. So that is not a surrender which Bali Maharaj is talking about. Here Bali Maharaj is convincing Shukracharya that if I do this Atma Nivedanam and surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then everyone will be pleased. Because the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is what? That if Krishna is pleased, everyone has to be pleased. And eventually we will see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even actually Shukracharya was pleased with the surrender of Bali Maharaj, who initially was objecting to that very surrender. So that is the difference between surrender in Krishna consciousness and surrender of modern day society, under the so-called religious fanaticism. So we see that because of Sharanagati, nobody is harmed at any point in time. So with this logic, Bali Maharaj decides to go ahead and give the three pieces, whatever three steps of land that Lord Vishnu wants. Now what happens? So Bali Maharaj says that if he is really Lord Vishnu, Shukracharya, as you are saying, then today I will conquer him. I'll flatten him by my devotion so that he will always lie down in my heart. That is the statement of Bali Maharaj. Now Shukracharya is already getting very angry now with Bali Maharaj. Okay? Because he is going against the instruction of spiritual master. The spiritual master is getting very angry now. To top that, to add fuel to fire, Bali Maharaj's wife Vindhyavati comes from there carrying a pot of water. Then Shukracharya sees that she goes straight to Vamanadeva to wash his feet. So he gets further incensed. Okay? That both husband and wife are not listening to me now. So immediately Shukracharya gets so angry that he immediately curses Bali Maharaj that Bali, you will go to hell. You will go to the lower planetary region. You will go to Sutara Loka. Okay? Because you think that you are too intelligent. I know what it is. I am so senior to you. I have seen much of life than what you have seen. This is sometimes, you know, even when someone becomes Krishna conscious, today we see, you know, we see our senior elders in the family, parents sometimes relatives, they come and, you know, give us lot of non-transcendental jnana, knowledge. Saying that, you know, what are you? You are actually a small child. I am your father. I have gone through so many things. I know what is life. Like that people tell us, right? So that way, Shukracharya is in a similar mood of advising, just based on seniority. But obviously, you know, he doesn't have bhakti. So he's advising. And he gets very angry, and when he doesn't listen, he curses that Bali Maharaj goes to hell. But still, Bali Maharaj goes ahead, and he has already now told that I have offered everything to the Lord. So as soon as the Lord accepts that gift, Lord Vamanadeva, who is so small, now becomes Lord Trivikrama. He becomes huge. And with the first step, he conquers all the lower planetary systems. And with the second step, all the higher planetary systems also. So the whole entire universe is now taken by Lord Vamanadeva. And there is nothing else to give now. But he has promised 3 steps of land. So therefore, he says, what do I do now? So Bali Maharaj then gives a very beautiful philosophy. He says that, Lord, we know always that the possessor is greater than the possession. Therefore, I was the possessor of whatever that you have taken away. So therefore, now the third offering which I am doing is the possessor himself. So please place your feet on my head. Now this is the mode of Atma Nikshepa. Atma Nikshepa, what did he say? Kshepa means objecting to the will of the Lord, and Nikshepa means surrendering to the will of the Lord. So he is showing Atma Nikshepa. He says, okay, whatever your desire, now you take me. Now, when that happens, in the same time, Prahlad Maharaj enters the arena. Now, when Prahlad Maharaj enters, what is happening? Normally, when Prahlad Maharaj is the grandfather of Bali Maharaj, so normally when such a person enters, a conditioned soul will try to allude to the seniors, okay, for some support in this situation. But Bali Maharaj doesn't do that. He doesn't allude to Prahlad Maharaj for some support in this situation. On the contrary, Bali Maharaj hangs his head in shame. Again, Atma Nikshepa. And Prahlad Maharaj also sees him. And Prahlad Maharaj doesn't go to Bali Maharaj and say, you know, my dear grandson, I know what you are going through. I'm very sorry about it. Let me do something. Let me negotiate with Lord Vishnu. He also is a Mahajana. So he doesn't, you know, go and take that kind of an approach. On the contrary, what he does, immediately when he sees Lord Vamana, Prahlad Maharaj starts glorifying the Lord. Lord, what a wonderful pastime you have done. So Prahlad Maharaj is also on the side. Except for Shukracharya, everybody is on the side of Lord Vishnu now. And finally, Lord Brahma comes there. Now Lord Brahma has come there in the mood of a lawyer, you know, an arbitrator kind of thing. So what is that skill, Prabhu? You told me one day. Mediation. He comes as mediator there. But before Lord Brahma could open his mouth and do any mediation, who stops him? Bali Maharaj's wife, Vindhyavati, who had just washed the lotus feet of the Lord, she stops Lord Brahma. Wait, I have something to say. And she makes a very beautiful statement. She says that, Lord, my husband has offered you his own self. And he says that he was the possessor, and now he says that you can take the possessor himself. And she gives very wonderful philosophy. She says, only those people who are ignorant think that they possess everything. Only people who are ignorant think that they are the benefactors. Only people who are ignorant think that they can give in charity. My husband has lost everything to you, but still he thinks that he can give something in charity. That is because that last trace of false ego is still left in him, and he thinks that his self belongs to him. So Lord, please remove that ignorance also from his mind. This is what Vindhyavati is praying to the Lord. And by this time, you know, and then Lord Brahma says, enough is enough now. Okay? And then Lord Brahma quotes a different argument. Lord Brahma says, Lord, you say in Bhagavad Gita, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati, that you are satisfied even with a fruit, flower, leaf or water. Now after, you know, conquering the entire material universe, still you are waiting for the third thing. This is what he is quoting. Lord Brahma. Okay. So he says, Lord, please stop it now. So by this time, of course, the Lord, having seen Prahlad Maharaj, you know that the Lord is always pleased with Prahlad Maharaj. Lord becomes immediately, even Narasingadeva was immediately satisfied when he saw Prahlad Maharaj. Now he is Prahlad Maharaj is there, Bali Maharaj is there, Vindhyavati is there. So with all these devotees, the Lord has to become satisfied, right? So the Lord is already very satisfied by the time that Brahma speaks this. The Lord becomes so satisfied, in fact, with this sacrifice, this pastime of Bali Maharaj, that the Lord said, Bali, I am so satisfied with you, I will become your personal guard in Sutarloka. So actually the Lord went down to Sutarloka and became his personal guard. And in Sutarloka, he gave all kinds of opulences to Bali Maharaj. It is said that the opulences are even greater than what Indra has got for Bali Maharaj. And it is said that Bali Maharaj, the whole palace where Bali Maharaj is living today, it has got 4 doors. And Bali Maharaj can come out through any of the doors as per his wish. And this caused lot of anxiety to the Lord, because the Lord was in such a mood of service to his devotee, the Lord became very anxious, which door should I guard now? Where will Bali Maharaj come out of? So Lord is always in anxiety to serve his devotee. In fact, so anxious he was that one day Lakshmi could not tolerate his anxiety, and she came and told Bali Maharaj, why don't you tell the Lord which exit you are going to come out of? So that at least he is not in anxiety. So this is how the Lord subordinated himself, seeing the Atma Nivedana mood of his pure devotee. So as predicted by Bali Maharaj, the Lord finally lay down in his heart. Now after this whole episode was over, what was the consciousness of Bali Maharaj? Now he has conquered the Lord. Okay. But Bali Maharaj had such a consciousness, he did not now start boasting about it. He did not say, just see how great my devotion is, everyone. See how nicely I have captured and conquered the Lord. Ultimately, see, I won. He didn't have this mood. On the contrary, his mood manifests in his words. His words, he said, my dear Lord, when you came to my arena of this fire sacrifice, I wanted to offer you obeisances physically, but because I was surrounded by demons around me, I could just offer obeisance to you mentally, my dear Lord. But even though I offered obeisance to you just mentally, even with that, look at what is the result that I have got. How glorious you have made me today, even for a mental obeisance. Your blessing, your mercy on me is as if a pure devotee has rendered devotional service unto you. This is his mood. So he doesn't think that he is a pure devotee at all. Okay. So therefore Bali Maharaj considered all that he gave to the Lord as insignificant. And this is why he is glorified as epitomizing the mood of Atma Nivedana. What about us? We are all very fortunate. Okay. Now one may wonder, how do I become Atma Nivedana? How do I come to the platform of Atma Nivedana? So there is an interesting quote somewhere I read in one of the lectures I heard actually, that Srila Prabhupada has said, those who are my followers, Srila Prabhupada said this, that those who are my followers, I curse them. I curse all my followers that they cannot enjoy material life at all. And the curse of a pure devotee is always true. So whether we want to surrender or whether we don't want to surrender, we will come to the platform of Atma Nivedana anyway, by Prabhupada's mercy. So we have that assurance. So today, as all of you know, is the disappearance day of one of the greatest, or rather it is said that the greatest devotee that ISKCON has ever had, the greatest disciple of Srila Prabhupada, His Grace Jayananda Prabhu. And it is very interesting, because today we are talking about the subject matter of Atma Nivedanam. And who else but Jayananda Prabhu is verily the example who all of us could see of Atma Nivedanam. Bali Maharaj, Atma Nivedanam was so many years back. But Jayananda Prabhu's Atma Nivedanam is what? How many years back? 20 years back? So we can all very easily relate that here was someone who actually epitomized the mood of Bali Maharaj. So with your permission, I'll just take another 5 minutes in sharing something about Jayananda Prabhu for the benefit of my own purification. So Jayananda Prabhu was actually a cab driver in San Francisco area. Okay. Now normally when we talk about cab drivers, we always think that the cab driver must, normally sometimes the mind says that he must not be a very educated person. Okay. Though now it is changing slowly. Now most of the educated students from India are cab drivers here, who are engineers, and you know, sometimes people with MBA also do cab driving. But I am talking about 1967. Okay. So Jayananda Prabhu was a cab driver. So very few people knew that Jayananda Prabhu had an engineering degree from Ohio State University. Okay. On top of that, he also had a teacher's degree. So he was a very highly qualified person, and he was driving a car, taxi. So someone asked him, why are you driving this taxi? So Jayananda Prabhu said that I am driving this taxi simply because I don't think that I can fit in with the upper class crowd of society. That was his statement. Now, as he was driving the taxi, he saw an advertisement saying that one of the Swamiji's from India is coming down and giving a lecture. So that is how he went. He met Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Because he had this desire that there is something higher in life than all these mundane things which we see. So he met Srila Prabhupada, and as soon as he saw Srila Prabhupada, he immediately took to the process of Krishna consciousness. It is said, what is that? One moment's association with a Vaishnava can make one a pure devotee. Of course, depending upon the mood of the devotee also. Okay. So he was all, you know, so Jayananda Prabhu was highly, you know, was in already a very high platform, such that, you know, when he saw Prabhupada, immediately he accepted that. Otherwise, you know, it takes years for many people. Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi Haya. So he immediately surrendered to Srila Prabhupada. So when someone asked him, why did you surrender to Srila Prabhupada? You didn't know about any Krishna conscious philosophy, etc. He said, I don't know, but when I saw Srila Prabhupada, I didn't know immediately what is Krishna conscious philosophy, but I knew that this man was a genuine person. He didn't want anything from me. I had this conviction from within my heart that here is a person who will not exploit anyone. So I had this complete faith in Srila Prabhupada, so I decided to surrender to him. Now, once Jayananda Prabhu surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, his surrender, Atma Nivedanam to Srila Prabhupada, was so high, and he said, Atma Nivedanam means what? Surrendering body, mind and soul. Jayananda Prabhu used to drive taxi for almost more than 15 hours a day of taxi driving, and at the end of the day, all that money which he earned, he simply used to give it to Srila Prabhupada, and he didn't used to wait also. Then Srila Prabhupada used to give him his allowance. Like that. That was his mood. Everything. So he earned $5,000 once he gave to Srila Prabhupada. That was his first major contribution. His second major contribution of $5,000, now all of you know that Jayananda Prabhu was suffering from leukemia or blood cancer. Towards the end of his life, he was suffering from blood cancer, and virtually he was reduced to a skeleton. People could not even see him in that body. Okay. But for him, he never felt that he was suffering. He was always, even in that state of consciousness, he was always busy making plans for the next Rath Yatra. And he was thinking, how do we celebrate the Rath Yatra? So devotees used to go to him, you know, asking him about his health, but he used to very intelligently divert the topic away from his health to the Rath Yatra of the Lord. And he used to behave so normal with everyone that sometimes devotees thought, does he really have blood cancer? That was the kind of, you know, consciousness that he was in. So Jayananda Prabhu's second contribution to Srila Prabhupada was, the moment he came to know that he had leukemia and he had no chances of survival, whatever savings that he had for his own medical treatment, that also he went and gave it to Srila Prabhupada. That was the kind of apanivedana that he had. And there are many small pastimes, just another 2-3 minutes and we'll share that with you. At 28, Jayananda Prabhu became the temple president. Now, Jayananda Prabhu's mood was, though he had this kind of a position, he never really thought that, you know, he is the leader and someone has to work under him. He was always in that mood that, no, I am just an ordinary person like everyone else, and everyone else is very superior to me. So, such a selfless service he had, he did not have even a subtle wish to satisfy his own desires. He had a very interesting practical motto in his life. His motto was, do whatever that needs to be done. So he never brought in any kind of seniority or hierarchy or anything like that. If something needs to be done, he was always in the forefront, just simply doing that. Now, over the years, he took very special interest in the Rath Yatra festival. And it is said that Jayananda Prabhu was one of the pioneers of the ISKCON Rath Yatra movement. So Jayananda Prabhu was involved in what is called as the end-to-end. Today many consulting companies talk about end-to-end, right? End-to-end services. So Jayanand Prabhu was an epitome of end-to-end service when it came to Rath Yatra, which means that he was himself the planner of Rath Yatra, he was himself the builder of the cart of the Rath Yatra, he was himself the preparer of bhoga or preparer of garlands, and everything that needs to be done for Rath Yatra, he himself used to do. And simply by seeing him serving, automatically volunteers will come and join him. The hippies who were there, they will automatically come and volunteer services. He never had to tell anyone, "Now you can you please come and help me?" That was his, by his own example, he used to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Now, one of the statements again, which he said was, which again shows his Atma Nimedanam, he always used to say this statement. He says, you know, things will not always go correct in Krishna consciousness. You have to keep chanting the holy names. And he always said this statement again and again to devotees. Things will not go right, but have faith in the holy name, it will become alright. And Jayananda Prabhu was most fond of, out of all his services, he was most fond of preaching service. And he just used to preach to anyone and everyone at any point in time. And one interesting example, it's slightly humorous also, but he shows his commitment. Jayananda Prabhu one day was repairing a Sankirtan van, which was broken down. So he was, he was in that, it was actually in a very dirty dress, okay, full filled with oil and soot. And he was, under the car and under the Sankirtan van, and he was repairing something. So what people could see was only 2 feet, outside. Okay. So somebody came outside and then they saw 2 hippies standing there. And very attentively they were, listening to something. So when he went closer, he realized that Jayananda Prabhu was preaching to them as he was working from the Sankirtan van. And he was actually giving a class on Bhagavad Gita. And even with that, these 2 hippies were standing and eventually they became devotees. So that was his power of preaching. And he was telling them, don't worry, you just have to have faith in the holy name. And about his humility, he exemplified the characteristic of humility. So once what happened was, Jayananda Prabhu, as usual, he always used to take, he rarely used to dress in Vaishnava clothes, dhoti, kurta, tilak and all that. He was always in the clothes, because he was always working, always. Right. So one day the Sunday feast program had picked up and a lot of devotees had started coming to the temple. So one new devotee had come to the temple. So as he came into the temple, he saw Jayananda Prabhu going with garbage, cans everywhere and unloading all the garbage. So Jayananda Prabhu saw him and said, "Hare Krishna, welcome," he said, and he asked, "Who are you?" He asked Jayananda Prabhu. Jayananda Prabhu said that, "I am the garbage man in the temple." And he said that, I have always spent my whole life seeing the garbage department, cleaning all this, the municipality, municipal corporation doing all this work, but by Krishna's mercy, for Krishna I have got this service now. And he was so happy doing that service that person who came new, he told Jayananda Prabhu, "Can I also please assist you?" Because he thought, that Jayananda Prabhu is so blissful doing this service, there must be something in the service which is very wonderful. So he actually not only assisted Jayananda Prabhu, but he became a devotee and joined the temple after that. So that was the power of preaching of Jayananda Prabhu. And it is said that Jayananda Prabhu's greatest quality was that never did he find faults with anyone. He was always very kind to all the Vaishnavas. Never did he offend any Vaishnava. And it is said that, I read somewhere, that even if Jayananda Prabhu saw someone offending someone, he will immediately get out of that place. He will not even, be in that place such that he hears such offences. What to speak of he offending someone? He never offended someone. On the contrary, even when new devotees came to the temple, obviously when new devotees come, they do a lot of goof-ups, right? So, the temple president specifically told Jayananda Prabhu, "You are in charge of new devotees." Because only Jayananda Prabhu had the patience and tolerance to accept the mistakes of new devotees. And new devotees also, when they saw Jayananda Prabhu giving them so much love and care, they were always encouraged to perform all kinds of services. And one final realization of Jayananda Prabhu was, once someone asked him, "Jayananda Prabhu, how does one make advancement in Krishna consciousness?" He went and asked Jayananda Prabhu. Jayananda Prabhu replied to him, "I really don't know how one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness. In fact, I am too busy working to think about it." So that was his answer. As regards his relationship with Srila Prabhupada, it is said that Srila Prabhupada used to visit many times the Los Angeles temple where Jayananda Prabhu spent a lot of his time. Never did Jayananda Prabhu ask for an audience with Srila Prabhupada. On the contrary, most of the times when Srila Prabhupada came, Jayananda Prabhu was already in some service or the other, and Srila Prabhupada himself was so upset with this that he had this desire to see Jayananda Prabhu. He said, where is Jayananda? Tell him to come and see me. And this is where something we learn. Sometimes, you know, when Guru Maharaj comes, all of us like to be in the forefront, doing all the forefront services. Everyone wants, you know, Guru Maharaj, you know, I want to do this service to your feet. Guru Maharaj, I will do Padabhishek for Guru Maharaj. And very few, sometimes, you know, it happens that our consciousness doesn't permit us to do background services which Guru Maharaj doesn't see. Whereas Jayananda Prabhu, you know, exemplified that one doesn't have to come in front of Guru Maharaj and do direct services. And the final quality of Jayananda Prabhu was fearlessness. As I mentioned earlier, even though he was battling with cancer, apart from, you know, what to speak of the fact that he himself was fearless, he also used to give others the assurance that nothing is wrong with him and we are not this body, we are just the soul. And by his behavior, he actually, you know, exemplified all these qualities, which we also find a lot of similarities with Vali Maharaj. So thank you for being very patient with me. I have gone overboard because of this. But thanks a lot for your patient hearing, and sorry if I have made any offenses in my conversation today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jayananda Prabhu Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhu.